It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. A lot of parents love to share photos and stories about their kids on social media. It's a fun and easy way to share information with family and friends, and it can help a parent who's spending a lot of time with very small people stay connected to the adult world. Plus, our kids are adorable, so we want people to see them. But how much is too much? Are parents shaping their children's online identities in a way that's unfair or could even come back to haunt them? This hour, we're going to talk about social media and children, and we also want to hear from you. Share your stories, your social media policies, your experiences, positive and negative. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or tweet us at IPR Talk. And my first guest today shares a lot of information about his kids online. Chris Snyder is an assistant professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at Drake University, and he's with me now. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And I know that you have a 5-year-old and an almost 3-year-old at home. And when your kids were born, you decided to create Facebook and Twitter profiles and YouTube channels for your kids. Why did you decide to do that?
Well, YouTube was more recently, and that was kind of driven by them. But when my son was born, I didn't want to be that person that filled my feed up on Facebook with nothing but kid photos. And so I thought a better way to do that would be to create a page for him. And that would allow even some of my students who were interested in my son to kind of follow what he's doing without being friends with me on social media. And so, and part of it too was, you know, I was teaching social media, and social media, I mean, that was 5 years ago. Social media was even different than it is now. And so part of it was learning how Facebook pages can work for me. So it was educational for me to do this sort of thing. And honestly, I didn't even really, you know that Facebook would be around 5 years from now when I did that 5 years ago. So, you know, it's something that I wasn't, you know, thinking long term about. I think it's been a good thing. I think it was fun really when they were little, and it's something that I don't update as much now that they get a little bit older. And so, you know, I think there's a good conversation here around kind of what we shouldn't be doing regarding our kids on social media.
So with creating pages for them, did you have personal policies about, you know, the kind of stuff that you would post?
Yeah, I didn't really write down a policy. Here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I'm not going to do. But, you know, I think that I was pretty cautious from the beginning. At least I hope I was, you know, and to think about, you know, posting things that they wouldn't one day, you know, see and be embarrassed by, or say, oh my God, why did you post that? And I'm sure that I posted some things along the way that were embarrassing to them. But, you know, I tried to be mindful of what I was doing, tried to be smart about what I'm doing, tried to not, you know, put them in any sort of danger with what I was doing. So, you know, I think subconsciously, at least, I was thinking about those sort of things.
Well, and as a professor who's teaching social media, I mean, when you talk to your students about social media, you probably share some warnings with them. I mean, what do you tell your students when you talk about what they should and should not post?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing I do, I mean, I teach a class that is pretty much all of our first-year students in their very first week of college in the School of Journalism at Drake. I basically teach them not to be stupid, and I show them examples of people who did stupid things on social media and all the repercussions that can come from that. And so, you know, I think that's also in the back of my mind too, is, you know, let's be smart about how I'm using social media with my kids, but at the same time, I'm not going to be scared away by it. I mean, I think that you can see some things that scare you in this regard, and the easy thing to do is say, okay, shut it down. But that's kind of the other thing I want to teach them too, is that we're not going to shut it down. We're not going to say, you know, no way, because this one bad thing happened. We're going to figure out the smart way to do this and do it the best possible way. And I think, you know, an example of that is, you know, we're in Iowa City, and a couple of years ago, an Iowa basketball player did something, you know, got into some sort of conversation on Twitter that went bad, and immediately the Iowa basketball coach said, okay, no Iowa basketball players on social media. And I disagreed with that, because, you know, to me, it's about education, not about let's just, you know, take this thing away.
So do you have kind of a simple policy that you share with your students when they think about posting on social media?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is I just tell them to think about it, to think twice about it. And especially because, you know, Twitter especially is about being funny. And so what's funny to you may be, you know, offensive to someone else or not funny to someone else. And so I think that's the biggest thing is you know, to be aware of that side of things is sense of humor can be different. And, you know, the biggest policy I have is to tell them, you know, never assume anything is private and never assume anything is going to disappear. You know, even though you may have a, you know, an app that's built on disappearing content.
Which they all do.
Yeah. Never assume that anything's going to disappear.
All right. And you said never assume anything's private. And of course, anybody who uses social media sites like, let's say Facebook or Instagram, there are all kinds of privacy settings that you can use so you can narrow the group of people who can see these pictures. But you feel like even if you do that, you shouldn't depend on that?
Yeah, I just wouldn't depend on that, you know, and I do, you know, and it's interesting how few people have ever gone through the privacy settings, and you really can take control, and it is empowering to see what you can do on, you know, the settings on almost all those apps. But all it takes is that one person to take a screenshot of something and share it somewhere else, and it's no longer private.
So in sharing all of this stuff about your kids on their own private Facebook pages as when they were babies, a way to share with family, friends, and other people who cared about your kids, how did it work? Did you feel like it was a positive experience?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, it gave a chance for – you know, a lot of people who, you know, maybe they were friends with the kid's mom, but not friends with me. And so, you know, I'm the one who takes photos in the family. So it gave an outlet so that these people could see that stuff as well. So, you know, it can really kind of open it up to a lot more people to see what's going on. You know, and the other thing, too, is, you know, I think living in kind of the tech world, we always talk about, you know, your kid is born. So you've got to claim their name on Twitter. You've got to claim their, you know, their name.com. You've got to claim all of these things just on the possibility that these things last forever. And, you know, as someone who likes to create a lot of content, you know, it gave me a chance to create content. You know, the flip side of this was I came from a newspaper where I had all kinds of content to work with every single day to suddenly, you know, teaching at Drake University, and I don't have content to work with, and I needed content, and there's this kid in front of me who's this amazing content every single day. And so, you know, in some regard, you know, I kind of needed that as an outlet for me. So maybe it was all selfish for me that I needed to be able to share some of these things.
Well, and I was going to ask you, what did you get out of it as a dad?
I mean, it's fun and it's rewarding. You know, I mean, I think that we, you know, I'm Gen X, and they say that Gen X shares things on social media and then 15 minutes later checks to see how many likes they got and wants, you know, wants that gratification of sharing those things. And so it was a lot of gratification. Also, you know, and I didn't, you know, so my son and daughter both have a Facebook page. It's not private. It's public. And you get a lot of information from Facebook when things are public. And so just seeing some of the results of how many people were reached on Facebook. I mean, all of these things were educational for me as someone who teaches social media, but also rewarding to see, you know, how far I could make things reach.
Now, a lot of parents post pictures of their kids on their own personal pages, and they don't necessarily associate their child's name with it. So if you do a Google search of a child's name, you're not going to come up with those images. In your case, you did associate your child's name with these images. And so if somebody wanted to search their name, they could find them. So let's look into the future. Now, you said you weren't sure Facebook would be around in 5 years. Let's look further into the future. When your daughter's or your son is 13 years old and maybe wants his own page of some kind, what do you think the repercussions might be of having his name associated already with all of these images?
I don't know. It's hard to, you know, it's tough. We don't think that far in advance. But I think it's positive. I didn't try to create a scenario that would be embarrassing for him or anything along those lines. I think, you know, I hope that right now the kids love looking at photos of themselves. They love looking at videos of themselves, and I think that's going to extend. You know, so here's an example. When I was 8 years old, I became a Chicago Cubs fan, and they're in the World Series right now, and I, for the life of me, I cannot find a photo of me as a kid wearing Cubs gear, and I know I wore Cubs gear all the time. So if only my parents would have created a Facebook profile of me in 1984, I would very easily find that photo of me in a Cubs hat and just post that to social media and say, look, I was a Cubs fan for a long time.
So do you, at this point, do you have concerns? Are you worried at all about what you created?
I think you know, as a smart parent, you've got to have some concerns, right? You've got to think about it. You've got to be smart. I realize that there's possibilities of, you know, someone stealing my kid's identity. I think that's probably the scary thing that's out there now, is that option, and you're not even going to know because they're kids. So that's the thing that concerns me. You know, I think that if I had, you know, a level of celebrity, or the kids achieved some sort of level of celebrity, or something went truly viral involving them, that I think I would be a little bit scared and probably back off and protect them. But I don't have huge concerns now, because, you know, I feel that I've been smart about what I've done.
When my kids were a little younger and I would post something funny that happened on Facebook, they would ask me, like, oh, did people like it? Read me the comments. They were very aware of this kind of interaction. Are your kids aware of these pages at this point? Do they interact with them?
Because I teach video, I've been trying to get my kids interested in video for a long time, and finally they both just fell in love with YouTube, and they wanted, well, I pushed it, but eventually they wanted to start making videos, and then they wanted their videos on YouTube, and that's kind of the big one. So I've put a few videos on YouTube of them. That's the big one to them, because that's, you know, at 3 and 5, YouTube is the thing that they understand what it is. They don't really understand Facebook or Twitter or anything like that, but they like to see the videos at least, so... You know, they're not concerned about how well they're doing or anything along those lines yet, but they do like to see it.
Have you ever had a moment as a dad where you felt like creating social media content has gotten in the way of the interaction with your kids? Like, this picture is so great, but maybe you need to put down the camera.
My son, a couple years ago, he used to tell me, put the phone away, Dad, a lot. So, you know, I think... And that's the thing, is we're trying to, you know, curate this great examples of our kids on there and put just the best stuff on there, because that's what we do on Facebook. And so sometimes you got to take 50 photos to get that one photo that's going to work. And so, yeah, I've heard Dad put the phone away a few times in my life.
Chris, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us today.
Thank you.
Chris Snyder is an assistant professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at Drake University. We've been talking about social media and children. We're going to continue this conversation this hour and get a number of different perspectives about kids on social media. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about kids and social media, what parents share online. And my next guests were recently profiled in an article in The Atlantic called The Perils of Sharenting. Stacy Steinberg is legal skills professor at the University of Florida College of Law, also an associate director at the Center for Children and Families at the University of Florida College of Law, and recently wrote a journal article about sharenting. Hello, Stacy.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. I also want to introduce Bahara Keith, faculty at the University of Florida College of Medicine, Department of Pediatrics. Hello, Bahara.
Hi, thank you so much for having us.
Well, thank you for being here. And Stacy, we'll start with you. What brought this whole idea about sharenting to your attention?
Well, for me, it really started when I was, as a parent myself, I share on social media. I also, in my spare time, I'm a photographer, and so I take pictures of other families and help them share on social media. And so I started to kind of question how this could affect our kids in the long run, and how we could balance children's rights to privacy with parents' interests in online sharing. What I realized is that there are so many benefits to what we're doing as parents when we share information about our families, but I wondered how this could affect kids in the long run, kind of the way Professor Snyder had said, you know, what are the concerns out there? And so I started to look at it as a legal scholar and explore children's privacy through the law. And I came to the conclusion that while there are potential solutions in the law, that this was really a public health issue. And it's something that we can educate parents about so that they can make the best choices for their kids. Professor Snyder used the word mindfulness, and I think that's what a lot of it comes down to, is to encourage parents to be mindful when they choose to share on social media. And my goal is to help to give parents guidance so that they can make the best decisions for their kids.
Can you give me an example of something that has happened in the social media sphere that made you think this is a public health issue?
Well, I think that for me, the public health issue, it's twofold. The first part is the issue of could somebody get access to this information and steal the child's identity, or could pedophiles have this information? But a bigger part for me was also the psychosocial issues. And, you know, there were a couple examples that I saw online that kind of illustrate it. One was around the holidays last year. There was a picture posted on social media of a family of five, and the mother and daughters all had gags on their mouths. And the caption was something like, finally, a peaceful, quiet holiday or something. And I was appalled by the picture for so many reasons. But one of the things that really struck me were how those kids might feel about that information being out there and being kind of part of that story one day. There were also concerns that I had about kids that were being used in memes to kind of poke fun at something, whether the child was heavy and it was a picture kind of laughing about how cute it was, but also how heavy the child was. And I worried about that child's well-being if they were ever to discover the picture into the future. And so issues of consent kind of came up in my head. Dr. Keith can talk about some of the other concerns with regards to online image stealing with regards to pedophiles or data brokers, but I think that it's really twofold. It's the risk, and then it's also the consent issue.
Well, and Dr. Keith, I'd love to hear your personal journey to this topic as well, since I just asked Stacey about hers, but how did this sort of come into your consciousness?
Absolutely. Well, when I first had my son, I did the same thing everybody else is doing because I have family all across the nation. And so I shared everything. So on the date of birth, you put the birthday pictures, and then, you don't even think. You think, oh, well, I'm just sharing this with grandma or aunt or whoever. And so then when Stacey and I started to look into this research and realized that, well, sure, grandma might have it, and maybe grandma reshared it to show her friends, and then maybe someone, one of her friends reshared that, and so on and so forth. You don't really know who ends up having this information of your child. And when we really consider some of the things we share, we started realizing that it can be stolen and it can also be misused. Additionally, there's actually studies out there now that we found that show that predators are trying to get this information. For example, the Australia eSafety study, they looked at millions of pictures from pedophile sites. And they found that about half of those photographs were stolen from family sharing. So the more we got into the research and realized that there are threats, the more we realized that we need to have a public health conversation about this so that other parents who are sharing can do so, but do so responsibly and make good decisions about what they put out there and know really what they're putting out there and how far that can extend.
So did you, with this realization, how did you change your behavior as a mom?
So I continue to share, and I'm very open that I continue to share, but I have sort of gone in and looked at all the privacy settings on my social media sites. I've kind of made them much stronger. I also really triple-check myself before I post. For example, if I used to before take a picture at the beach and just post it, now I only post the picture where you can just see the face. You can't see the rest of the body in the swimsuit. So just little things where I'm just sort of being a little bit more cognizant of, well, if somebody took this, what could they do with it? And I don't do the birthday thing on the birthday anymore because I don't want people to know exactly what the birthday is, because that's private information that can be used by the wrong people.
Stacey, in thinking about some of the long-reaching ramifications, in most cases, an image of a child without that child's identifying information, that's probably not going to come back to haunt that child or that family in most cases. Give me some of your more concrete concerns about these images in the long run. Because, you know, if I punch my child's name into a Google image search or any kind of image search, it doesn't come up because they're associated with me, not with their own name.
Well, I think it's kind of a bigger issue than the child just finding it. It's how we perceive our children, whether we look at them as objects or individuals. And so while I think that it is certainly within the parent's domain to choose how to portray their family in all public settings, I think that it's also important for parents to recognize that their child isn't like their job or their hobby or their sports. They're a person. And so the information that we put out there, it's kind of an act in and of itself of us choosing how we portray this other individual. Just like if we were portraying another individual who might not be in our family. So as a legal scholar, I looked at parents' rights. And so I approached this with the perspective that, first of all, parents certainly have a right to share most things that they might want to share. They have rights under the First Amendment. And I also recognize that in the United States, we give strong deference to parental autonomy. We, as a nation, believe that parents are best suited to choose what to do on behalf of their children. And in most situations, parents are going to think about this and to try to be mindful and to do what's best for their kids. But we thought about how this might come to play as kids get kind of older and aware of that phone in the parent's hand, and just what sharing might be. You know, some of the risks that we recognized are kind of more are deeper seated. You know, even my 5-year-old can recognize if I'm taking a picture and I'm sharing it. And so I try to be conscious of asking him or her, you know, asking my son how he might feel about that being shared. He might not fully understand what Facebook is or what social media is, but he does understand when we're talking about, if we're talking about our child to somebody else, if they're sitting in the room and we're having a conversation with a friend, they're aware that we're having that conversation. And I think more and more kids are aware that phones are a useful tool in communication, and so that we are communicating what it is that they're doing. So some of the concrete things that we talk about doing is to give the older kids some veto power, some control over that information, so that as they grow up, they learn that consent is an important part of the conversation with regards to online sharing, whether it's their parent sharing about them or them sharing about one of their peers as they get a little bit older. We also, you know, recommend that parents regularly kind of have a conversation amongst themselves, you know, as parent partners, if the two parents are both sharing differently, that they can communicate that to make sure that they're doing it in similar ways. In my research, I did recognize that a lot of times the child might not come up in the search, like you had mentioned, through Google, but it could reveal itself in embarrassing ways if the child becomes a teenager and another child has access to it through their friend's Facebook page, and cyberbullying or a real bullying is certainly a concern. And so it could show up in embarrassing ways, even when a parent doesn't expect it.
I want to bring somebody else into the conversation. We're talking about kids and social media this hour. With me, Stacy Steinberg, legal skills professor at the University of Florida College of Law and also associate director at the Center for Children and Families at the University of Florida College of Law. Bahara Keith, faculty at the University of Florida College of Medicine, Department of Pediatrics. And we'd love to hear from you this hour, too. What are your personal experiences with social media? What kind of social media concerns do you have? What are the policies in your family? What has social media given you as a parent? Because I know it's an important community for a lot of people as well. And I want to bring Sarah Meehan into the conversation. She is co-founder and owner of the Iowa City Moms Blog. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And first of all, since I've asked everybody to give me a little bit of background about their families and their social media use, let's start there with you, and then we'll talk more about the blogging community as well. But tell me a little bit about your family.
Sure. So my husband and I have 4 children. They all have summer birthdays except my youngest. So they just turned 8, 6, and 4, and then our baby will be 1 in December. And then as far as social media use, I would say that I'm pretty, I share a lot on social media, but I do, like Stacey was saying, I do kind of triple check myself when sharing, because I do, as a parent, try to think about, down the line, what will that look like for my kids? So I try to be careful of that.
How do you feel that your social media use and really the community that you're part of has changed since the 8-year-old was born? I mean, a lot has shifted in the last 8 years.
Oh, so much. I feel like when my 8-year-old was born, it was more of just for me, it was just sharing like an album of photos. So really, it was just an online photo album for me personally. Like everyone said, just to share with family that didn't live nearby. And I really never used it on a daily basis at that time. I didn't share you know, month by month, how he was growing or his, you know, stage of development. I really just shared photos in an album type thing. And now it's so much different. It's just every day everyone's sharing, you know, they took one step, they took two steps today, or they're eating carrots today and they're eating apples tomorrow. And it's just so day by day now, even minute by minute with people's kids.
What do you feel like as a parent of young kids having a social media community has done for you?
Well, I definitely would say it's been positive. As far as the blog, I feel like that's kind of a place that's a little bit of a hybrid. I mean, we share a lot, but I feel it's more in generalities, and I think that that can really be helpful for people. So not even using our kids' names or, you know, what school they go to, but even just talking about fears that we have as a mom when they start kindergarten, you know, how do you deal with that transition and any kind of transition? I've found that talking about those things on the blog has been so healing for people and so helped them feel less isolated while not even really mentioning your child's name or age or, you know, what school they attend.
If I could jump in, I think Sarah makes an excellent point about the positive benefits of online sharing. And, you know, as I work through this issue, that was something that I saw time and again, that really social media offers parents a unique opportunity to give a voice to for special medical conditions that might come up, for feelings that parents are experiencing. Parenthood can be an isolated experience for some, and it can be an opportunity to engage in deep conversation. And so I think that as we work through it, that's why this issue is so complicated and so important, because it really is such a unique place where there are so many benefits, but also a place where we have to be cognizant of potential risks.
Well, and Sarah, I'd love to hear from you why you started blogging as a mother and really have created this community with the Iowa City Moms blog, which I know is not just you. There are 24 contributing writers as part of that blog. But what drew you to doing something really more intensive online?
Right. Well, I had a personal blog, and I would call myself a writer. So I obviously love the blogging aspect of sharing thoughts and stories and things like that. But for me, it was more when I had my first two children, my husband and I were pretty much the first out of our group of friends to have kids. And I felt a lot of support from our family, but I didn't have that mom connection. So I didn't have any friends really that had children. And so I didn't feel that I was missing anything until I came across these blogs. So I actually first came across the Quad City Moms blog, which is where I'm from, and just became a contributing writer and just found this whole new world of people that were going through what I was going through. And I just immediately wished that I had had it, you know, 5 years prior when I had had my first son. And so when the opportunity came up to start my own blog here in Iowa City, I just jumped right on it. I mean, I just was so thrilled to be bringing that to Iowa City. I think that moms in every city could use that kind of connection.
What kinds of things do you find yourself writing about?
I would say I'm more of an emotional writer. So like I mentioned, I wrote about my son starting kindergarten. My daughter just recently started preschool, and we kind of went through that whole attachment. She's having some issues with being away from me. And so I write more about things that, you know, may be harder for moms. I also wrote about body issues. I wrote about being thin and having people bring up the fact that you're thin, and that can be just as hurtful as people who are overweight. And that was a really hard post for me to write, but I had so much encouragement from friends that had felt that way or had heard people that felt that way. And the response was just overwhelmingly positive and reinforcement for me to just keep sharing my thoughts. But I do have a lot of writers who write less serious posts, but just as important. I mean, sharing recipes and sharing things about allergies or, like Stacey was saying, things about different health issues, and not even sharing, you know, what their children have or any specifics, but just sharing tips or tricks or, you know, even posting that anonymously and saying, you know, my son has this and this is what we do, but not having to share who you are and who your son is.
I'm talking with Sarah Meehan. She's co-founder and owner of the Iowa City Moms Blog. Also with me this hour, Stacey Steinberg, legal skills professor at the University of Florida College of Law. She's also the associate director of the Center for Children and Families there. Dr. Bahara Keith is here, faculty at the University of Florida College of Medicine Department of Pediatrics. We'd also love to hear from you. We're talking about social media and kids today, how much we share, why we share, what some of the concerns are, what are the positive aspects of it as well. We'd love to hear your thoughts and your experiences. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about kids and social media, the good, the bad, the stuff that maybe we don't really know about yet. With me is Stacey Steinberg. She is the author of a paper on what she calls sharenting and some of the concerns about sharing a lot of information about our kids online. She's a legal skills professor and the associate director of the Center for Children and Families at the University of Florida College of Law. Dr. Bahara Keith is here, faculty at the University of Florida College of Medicine, Department of Pediatrics, and we'd love to hear from you as well. We're also talking with Sarah Meehan. She's co-founder and owner of the Iowa City Moms Blog. We know that a lot of people have experiences with this, with their own social media use, with the blogging community. We want to hear your thoughts. 866-780-9100. And Sarah, before we move on to callers, I would love to hear from you as a mommy blogger. Of course, you've talked about how supportive that community can be and how people find your experiences to be helpful to them and when they feel alone and isolated. But also, because you're sharing this information publicly, you can also get a lot of criticism from people. Do you find that sometimes you share a story about your family and then people pick you apart?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely get criticism here and there. I have found that we tend to, if we're going to take one point of view on something, so for example, we're going to talk about breastfeeding one day, we try to schedule those posts along with the other side of the story. So we had one of our writers wrote a wonderful piece about formula feeding, and we just scheduled it right during the middle of the breastfeeding week posting. So I feel like we do a pretty good job of sharing both sides, if there are two sides or multiple sides. And reminding moms that we aren't, pushing any sort of agenda or any one perspective on motherhood. So, yes, I would say we have gotten criticism, but I would say I've been shocked at how little criticism we've gotten, because I do feel like we have so many moms on our team. We have 24 different perspectives to come from, and I think that's really what sets us apart from, a mommy blogger who has a blog about just her and her family and what she chooses to do.
Right. Well, and especially a couple of years ago, people were making a big deal about what they were calling the mommy wars, mothers with different ways of parenting, judging each other, saying, that this is the only way that you can possibly do that. Was that something you were really trying to avoid being a part of in creating this diverse community?
Yes, for sure. I think that's one of our number one goals. I mean, our main goal at the Iowa City Moms Blog is to connect moms and families to each other and to our community. And so I feel like if you're talking constantly about, these topics that could have controversy, I feel like your focus is not on connecting people. And so that is our number one goal.
And Dr. Keith, in listening to Sarah talk about moms who blog with her, sharing information about allergies, and Stacey mentioned earlier the communities that can spring up. I mean, as a pediatrician, what kind of benefits do you see to having these kinds of communities?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of advocacy that we can do, depending on the topic. There's, as we are discussing, a lot of things that affect children and a lot of things that are pertaining to health. And so using social media to advocate for those things is a wonderful thing. In our public health literature, we're actually finding that we need to do more and more research and more advocacy campaigns within social media, because they tend to be very effective. We reach a really big audience using these tools. And so we certainly don't want that to stop. We just want to make sure that when we are doing these things, we're definitely protecting our children and not putting something out there that the child might not like or that might be misused. There's actually studies. Bartholomew et al. Actually showed that parents sharing creates what we've been talking about here, which is creates a community, and it creates a new form of social capital, and that's also another benefit. And, of course, when we're speaking of medical issues and medical things, and that certainly can affect families as well as the children. I don't want that to stop. I don't want to stifle that. I want to make sure that we get that public health benefit as well. But that we do so in a very responsible way.
Let's go to the phones. Carla is on the line traveling today. Hi, Carla.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
My question reverts back to creating accounts for children and in some cases even unborn children. The Facebook user agreement requires that the owner be at least 13 years of age. I know Pinterest is the same. I'm not sure about other social media sources. But I wonder if your speakers consider that as they set up accounts for very young children and give ownership at a very young age to those accounts. Do they think they're teaching their children that online rules may not apply to them?
Stacy, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Sure. Well, I think that those rules, of course, if those are the rules, that's probably what's best to be followed. I couldn't really opine as to whether or not parents can set up accounts for their child with the parent acting as shepherd of the account. You know, I think that the caller makes an excellent point, though, that I wanted to talk about with regards to kids modeling our behaviors. And in so many ways, what we do as parents on social media is what our children will learn are the best ways to do things. So, you know, it's kind of a complicated issue with regards to how we act. And the whole idea of do as I say, not as I do can certainly apply with regards to online sharing. A definition of privacy, just like anything else that we teach our kids, is something that our children will be instilled in our children. And so as we share on social media, it is really important to think about how our decisions today might affect their own decision making tomorrow.
Interesting. Carla, thank you so much for your call. Kelsey is on the line in Adel. Hi, Kelsey.
Good morning.
What's your experience?
Well, as a millennial who should be sharing my whole entire life on social media, I actually have two young children, and I don't share anything about them on social media.
And why did you decide that that was the approach you wanted to take?
Well, when our first son was born, we decided that we just would ask our friends and family not to post very many things on social media. And we, as well, didn't post very many things. And one day, he was probably about a month old, I Googled his name because I was curious if anything would come up. And sure enough, multiple social media accounts popped up with his full name, his birth date. And it just kind of didn't sit well with my husband and I. So we decided that it probably would be best if we just said, you know, please don't post anything for our friends and family. And we also decided not to follow that same rule and not post anything about them, just to maintain their privacy and make sure that they were protected from all those, you know, potentially harmful things that could occur from using social media.
Do you find that your friends and family are understanding and respectful of your policy?
At first, no, because I think that they were very caught off guard that we didn't want them to share anything on social media. I think some people might have taken it personally, but really it was just something that we chose to do that was in the best interest of our children, or at least that's what we think. And so we had our share of battles at first, you know, asking people to take things down. But now people are used to it, and they definitely follow and are respectful of our wishes.
And do you find it's such an easy way to share things about your kids? Do you find that it's challenging to share what you want to share with the people that you want to share it with?
Yeah, it definitely is, especially, you know, if we, so we just had our second child and, you know, I didn't post anything about my pregnancy, but sure enough, you know, photos would pop up here and there, you know, showing my pregnant belly. So then once we finally had our second child, I had people that, you know, I hadn't reached out to in a long time message me on Facebook asking if I'd had my baby yet. And so it's interesting the reach that social media can have and the people that, you know, are watching and keeping an eye on you who might not even reach out to you in person. So yes and no, but that it's more of a way that, you know, we have tried to personally connect with our friends and family, you know, not through social media. So it's been good in more ways than one.
You feel good about the decision that you've made?
Yes, we do.
Kelsey, thank you so much for sharing your experience. And Stacey, I want to ask you a question with regards to Kelsey, because a lot of people have other people who post pictures of their children. And we heard from Lena, who also said a friend was looking after another friend's child for the weekend and posted a photo of that child on Facebook without the parent's consent. How would a parent approach the situation to make sure that your friends don't do this?
Well, that's an interesting question, and it's something that I've had a few people reach out to me as well with regards to schools sharing information about their kids or other people sharing information. I think the first thing is for the parent to speak up and to express what their wishes are and what their feelings are with it. I think that there, of course, could be solutions within the law, but I certainly think that the best method of handling this is through education and through having a conversation. You know, in most circumstances, the way our society works is we place parents in the role of gatekeeper, and the parent is the one who decides what information is disclosed, whether through HIPAA or FERPA or with regards to schools sharing information about our kids or friends. Online sharing by parents is the unique place where parents are both the gatekeeper and the person disclosing the information. And so it kind of situates it at a really unique place with regards to the whole parent-child relationship. I think that the caller made, you know, has said really clearly of why she chose to do what she did, and she seems very happy with her decision. And I think that as a society, we have to learn to respect varying positions with regards to this, because our goal, Dr. Keith and my goal, isn't to force parents to do things one way, but instead to give parents all of the information so that they can make the best choice for their family. And the caller seems like she's made the best choice for her family, and her wishes should be enforced.
We have this email from Elizabeth in Des Moines with another perspective on whether photos of kids are okay. She says, I do post them. However, a few years ago, I stumbled across a photo of one of my kids on a page labeled Black Girls. They were not sexualized, and my kid was not identified, but it was creepy. I don't even remember how I found it. She says, I have another child with albinism, what people call being albino. A number of parents have found photos of their kids in creepy, fetishized kinds of sites. I never have, but it seems to be not unusual. So I know some people have taken their photos down. And Dr. Keith, that relates to what we were talking about earlier as a possible public health issue.
That's exactly right. Because there are predators out there, and they're always going to be out there. They look for these types of things. And what's really unfortunate is that even images that are not really in any state of undress, or in, it could just be normal daily life images. So, for example, on the eSafety Commission, they found that on these pedophile sites, they actually had folders with titles such as, you know, a day at the beach or going to the park, just daily activity that we do not think could become sexualized had been made sexualized simply by adding some caption. Other instances that we found included people that stole images. Now, again, these images might not be identified specifically with your child's name, but they stole the images and were using those images as their own children. And so, you know, in a way, they were basically presenting those children as their own. And so, unfortunately, there are always going to be people out there who are going to misuse information. And our job is to just educate everybody that these possibilities are there, and for parents to try to maximize every protection they could possibly put out there before they actually share anything about their children.
Well, and Elizabeth talked about how it was creepy to find her daughter's image there.
Right.
And I creepy is a really good word for it. But what is the danger, do you feel? I mean, I don't want people looking at my kids' images in that way. But how does that put my child at risk?
Well, what's really a risk is that, let's say, somebody that is a predator is on these sites and ends up liking one of these images and then decides to make your child their target. So that's the more direct harm, that they can now take that image and like sort of back search and look and see who this child actually is and maybe target them. So there are definitely concrete. Now, these are rare instances. Yes, the images, the sharing of the images is not rare, but the child becoming target would be more rare. So it's a concrete danger that does exist because there are, unfortunately, people out there who are going to target our children.
Sarah, with the Iowa City Moms blog, is this a conversation that you and the other bloggers have had? Because a lot of parents have questions about what should I share? How can I share?
Oh, definitely. So we bring on new contributors every 6 to 12 months, and that's definitely one of the number one things that we tell them, is that what they share is completely up to them. So like I said, if they want to use a photo of their child in their blog post, they can. If they want to use a stock photo, we provide those for them as well. So there's a lot of opportunity to share somewhat anonymously. Their name is still posted as the author, but in some circumstances, we do allow them to post as an anonymous author as well. So there would really be no tie at all to them, because we do also have guest bloggers. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be one of our 24 moms. So if someone posts anonymously, there really isn't any way, aside from me knowing that that identity, there isn't any way for anyone to know who they are and which children they're talking about.
Sarah Meehan, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you so much.
Sarah Meehan is co-founder and owner of the Iowa City Moms blog. And one of the things that I wanted to make sure we didn't do this hour is create a really negative environment around people who do something that is, for the most part, harmless, and people reaching out to friends and family. Stacey, do you have some parting advice for parents who want to do this, and it's an important part of their community, but want to do it safely?
Sure. I think my parting advice would be to think before you share, not only of your child's current well-being, but of their future well-being as well. Untangling this parent's right to share his or her own story with the child's interest in entering adulthood, with the ability to create their own digital footprint, it's a daunting task, and it's something that is brand new, and we right now don't have clear policies available for parents when they think through this issue. But it's important to remember that these kids are just now, the oldest kids from social media are just now entering adulthood and college and the job market. They'll be able to give us some feedback, and I think that what's important is
it's time to be mindful. Stacey Steinberg, yeah. Thank you very much, and Dr. Bahara Keith, thank you. This is Talk of Iowa.